Josh. It's really great to be here this morning, and well done for getting here. I feel like a short talk or a talk with actions is kind of required. Who's feeling a bit chilly? It is a bit chilly. Thanks for hanging in there. And hello to everybody online as well. Hope you're nice and warm. We're loving it here. See you next time. We are kicking off a brand new teaching series. It's going to be 8 weeks long, and oh my Lord, I love me a good teaching series. So we are into it, actually, and this is really the second half of the teaching series that we began in the early part of the year. So we began a teaching series on generosity, and really the flip side of the coin is our thinking around justice as well. And what you see in the Bible is these two ideas are related together. So that's where we're going to head into for the next 8 weeks. Are you all ready for this? It's going to be a great time. Now, I've written some notes, but as you all know, that really means nothing. But we're into it. When I was 18, my brother, who was 19, and I, we finished a job working in Japan, and we found ourselves backpacking through China. The goal was to start in Guangzhou and then just trying to make our way to the top as kind of as quickly as we could. But we had a paper bag full of American dollars that we had earned from driving trucks and doing construction and laying kind of a wastewater line between these two cities. So we did that for a while, and we had this big packet of money with us, and we bought a carton of Marlboro cigarettes, and we stuffed that in the pack because you just never know, right? So we began our journey. We made it up from Hong Kong to Guangzhou, and then we, with our American dollars and a few cigarettes, bought black market tickets to Beijing. It takes about 3 days back in the day. This is 1993, right? So I think dial-up's happening at this point. I'm not exactly sure. And it was a pretty long trip to make your way up from Guangzhou to Beijing. I mean, I grew up in Nelson, and which is, I think, the smallest city in New Zealand. It's a very small city with an incredibly small gene pool also. We'll talk about that another time. But, it was very sheltered kind of upbringing. It was wonderful. The only real crime I saw was the fashion that was sold at the Nelson Market. You know, it was really bad. I remember hopping off the train when we got to Beijing. It was kind of early in the morning. It was super misty and smoggy. It was difficult to know what in 1993. We made our way down to the canal that runs through Beijing. We found ourselves a really super cheap hotel. The key kind of, that was job number one, done. Find shelter, right? Job number two was to transfer or convert or launder might be the right word, I'm not exactly sure, these American dollars into, some of them into the local currency, renminbi. And it felt like you were doing a magic trick, really, because you would hand over one note, right, and with one hand, and get a wad of, like, who knows what in the next. But there was a lot of it. And the trick with money changing was that you kind of had to be quick with maths and be really kind of okay with the fact you're going to be mildly ripped off most of the time. We were day two into this little gig of exchanging our money with money changers, and we met up with a German backpacker, and we went together to change some money. She was with us, and she handed over, I think, $200, which was basically you needed a wheelbarrow to carry the money away kind of at this point. And she got really badly ripped off. I mean, she basically got her money stolen. It's a pretty awkward situation because it's not exactly legal, right, to be doing this. So I'm saying, you know, this is not what you do when you're jogging with Jesus. This is just kind of like, this is the situation. So she gets her money stolen from her, and then a fight breaks out. It's pretty intense. It's full on. And so a fight breaks out, and it's pretty nerve-wracking. You're in a foreign country. You're kind of in this not me, of course. You know, this is for, and but thankfully, two police officers step into the situation. I thought, oh my gosh, this is great. You know, instant relief. But strangely, what happened was she got an AK-47 poked in her chest and pushed away, while the other guard helped the money changer up off the ground and then handed him $150, saying thanks for the protection. It was kind of like this situation, while it wasn't like, this is not the worst kind of thing to have experienced in one's life, I can't, you know, I can recall the details of this quite intimately, and it's just really fresh in my mind. You know, this sense of like, this, what, there's something really wrong about this situation. There's something not just like, not, it's just something really, really wrong. You know, justice is one of those things that runs deep within people. It's a very human thing. And often we can't put our finger on it, but man, we know it when we see it, and we can feel it really deeply when we experience it. You know, if I handed you a sheet of paper this morning with a pen, you know, I'm pretty sure that you could not write down on that piece of paper every kid you ever went to school with or every teacher you went to school with. But I bet you can recall the kid who bullied you or teased you or the teacher that was slightly mean-spirited and told you off for something that you never did. We record, you see, these moments of injustice somewhere within our brains and our minds and our bodies. It kind of is carried deep within us. You know, justice is one of the very human things about us, and it's so key that we understand it and unpack it and get around this idea of what justice is if we're really going to understand what it means to flourish and come truly alive as human beings. So this is where we're going to head into for the next 8 weeks. We're going to be having a look at justice. And honestly, we're going to camp out here for the next 8 weeks because it's so multifaceted. It's so deep. And what I want us to do really is just be open to the reality that there's kind of like, I realize that when we speak about justice, often it can be quite triggering. It can be a sense of like, I don't want to hear this, or I thought it was this and now it's that. But I just want us to be open to understanding what God's justice is truly like. And because our role in the world is to reflect that into the world, our role is to reflect God's heart and God's vision for justice into the world, that we might be doing that more and more and more, that other people might know and come to experience God's goodness. Now, justice is a huge topic in the Bible. Look, it may not be too much of a surprise to you, maybe a surprise for you to some, but if you cut out all the parts in the Bible that deal with justice, you actually wouldn't have much Bible left. One in every 10 verses in the Old Testament has to do with justice. This actually ramps up considering once you get to the New Testament. In Luke's, for Luke's Gospel, for example, one in every 6 verses in Luke's Gospel has to do with justice. Justice is such a key element in the Bible to who God is. Now, God's vision for justice, I don't know what comes to mind when you think about that, but often it's kind of what gets triggered in our brain is a sense of like, I don't know, the kind of cosmic version of angry dad syndrome. You know, you left your bike out, it's raining, you hear these angry footsteps coming down the, you know, coming down the hallway. You know what it's about. And often we think about justice as eliciting these kinds of emotions. Often kind of ones a bit like, oh, you know, God's justice kind of like, maybe that's about fear, or this is about like, I need to hide. You know, what's so often the case in the Psalms and all throughout pretty much the Old Testament, the most common emotion associated with God's justice is actually joy. Joy that actually the world is being put to rights again. So God's vision of justice is not primarily about retribution. God's vision for justice is actually pushing the wrong things right in this world. So often when people are wanting God to come. Come as the judge. Come and bring your justice, because then there will be release. Then there'll be something new. Then things will begin to flourish, and creation will be released into an amazing season of joy. Joy and justice in the Bible are actually welded very, very often together. Justice in the Bible is not primarily about, it's not about condemnation. It's actually about transformation and resurrection. Have a look at this from John's Gospel. John 3:16, one of the most kind of common passages in the Bible. For God so loved the world that he gave his only Son, so that everyone who believes in him may not perish but have eternal life. Now, every day is a school day, right? I learned something this morning. Thankfully, we've got a person with a PhD in Greek sitting at the back, basically doing the slides. What Julia helped me with this morning was the fact, see that for God so loved the world, that's actually not about a sense of quantity, like, oh, I love the world. I was loving the world this much, but in fact, and now I love the world this much, so much, I'm going to send the person of Jesus. It's actually more like God loved the world in this way. This is the way that God loves the world. God's love for the world works out like this, by sending his Son into the world so that everyone who believes in him may not perish but have eternal life. Let's hit the next part. Indeed, God did not send the Son into the world to condemn the world. It's not about condemnation, but in order the world, but in order for the world to be saved through him. Can you see that primarily justice is about the restoration of all things? This is God's heart. This is God's vision for what justice is actually all about. Now, broadly speaking today, we kind of find ourselves in one or two camps when we think about justice and we think about what does it mean to put the world to right. On one side, there's a kind of a way of approaching things. It's what might be called like a systemic approach. We're thinking about, you know, quite wide sociological things. We're thinking about poverty. We're thinking about racism. We're thinking about kind of how things work on quite big, you know, scales. We're thinking about the way that colonialism has affected countries, the monetary system, all these quite big things. So in one way, the approach is what you would call quite wide systemic change, kind of thinking about things on a social level. There's another approach that thinks about how things change or thinking about justice on quite an individual level. And in this regard, it's more about like individual freedom, becoming the right kinds of person. It's about a sense of like our personal morality is the most important thing here and our personal freedom. Now, what's interesting when you get to the Bible is God also is described, or God's justice is described in quite similar terms. God's justice, or God's personhood, is on the one hand, God is revealed as holy in his presence, trustworthy in his person, and honorable and compassionate and faithful in his dealings with humanity. And the Hebrew word for that is the word tzedakah. On the other hand, God is also concerned about systemic change. He's talking about the kind of very concerned about the big imbalances in the world and the preferential option of basically being present and wanting to work for those who are victimized by those systems. God is near to the growl of the hungry belly. He's close to those who are shivering naked. He's very close to the thirsty, those with parched throats. So God's got a real heart for this too, and the Hebrew word for that is tzedakah. They're the same thing. One is the root and the other is the fruit. We're not talking about individual change versus social change when you get to the Bible. God is concerned about the whole lot. So often we kind of feel like there's a divide between personal spiritual formation and social justice. But what we have in the Bible is these things are actually to be joined together. They're the one thing. But one is the fruit and the other is the root. But the thing, the tree, they come from the same tree, and that tree is tzedakah. God's justice wants to see all things made new. Us personally made new and the world made new. You made new. You know, the way that you live, your spiritual formation is deeply important to God. But of course, also is your neighbor very important to God. You're to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to do what? Love your neighbor as yourself. They are these two things that join together. They're joined together by this big word, tzedakah. God's justice is concerned about the putting right of human beings and you individually. And your spiritual formation is deeply, deeply important. But also the poor, the hungry, where there is systemic imbalance. The idea of equity is absolutely enormous in the Bible too. And we're called as human beings to be formed in such a way that we reflect God's heart for justice into the world. So when we have these things pulled together, you get real change. But often we tend to focus on one and not the other. When there's such a focus on spiritual formation, that often that never matures into thinking about how that works out in social change. And when we focus only on that, the fruit of spiritual formation is never able to mature, and what you lack is spiritual authority. Often when we focus on social justice and only that without the spiritual formation, what you're doing is you're trying to produce the fruit of that, but it has no root to connect it with life and energy. And so often is the case that when you kind of disconnect those two things, is that you're wanting to do something amazing, but it lacks spiritual power. And so often the case that desire can be co-opted by other things and it gets reshaped and actually can become, you know, a negative force in the world. But join these two together, and then you've got something really powerful. Then you've got God's justice entering into the world. You've got something that produces more. So you see, in the Bible, God's justice is not about setting things back to zero, right? There's this terrible situation. God gets involved, it gets it back to zero. That's actually not what God's justice is about. You've got this, things are not right, God sets them up to zero, but actually produces more. It's actually wants to produce more than the situation. God's justice is not just about restitution, it's not just about the situation being restored. God's justice is about transformation and resurrection. There's actually a connection between God's sense of generosity that actually brings a surplus of justice into being. And the classic kind of example of this is actually the Exodus story. And if we just jump to that now, the Exodus story, as you probably know, is this kind of great story of liberation. God intervenes and sets about the release of Israel from 400 years of slavery. Israel's in slavery because, you know, there was a famine in the land that they used to be in, and they were forced to go to Egypt as refugees and become migrant workers for Egypt. There, as migrant workers, they were co-opted and basically forced into slave labor to keep the economic and military machine of Egypt running. When God, this passage here, it's kind of talks about God releasing them, but Pharaoh's response to them is like, oh, I don't want this to happen, not because this is a bad idea, but he's worried about the economy. He's worried about their security. That's the major thing Pharaoh is worried about. Now, of course, this would only happen back then. I know you have to imagine the situation. No, this would never happen nowadays. So just kind of use your imaginations and get back to there. But here you have a situation of real desperation. And here's a couple of moves here. Then the Lord said to Moses, I have observed the misery of my people who are in Egypt. I have heard their cry on account of their taskmasters. Indeed, I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them from the Egyptians and to bring them up out of the land to go to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey. Can you see the transformation of God's justice at work here? God responds to hearing their cry. Just hold that. We're going to get back to that in a minute as we talk about the importance of prayer. But just hold that for a moment. Can you see here that God responds not just by freeing the Israelites from their kind of slavery and their bondage to set them basically continuously kind of, or put them back to zero, but just in freedom in Egypt, like with new jobs and living in the suburbs, right? That's not what's going on here. Can you see that it's actually when God brings about God's justice or God's justice gets injected into a situation, it doesn't bring about a sense of just restoration. There's a sense of transformation. God takes them from that situation and brings them to a land of milk and honey. Something completely more, something completely new. This is the hint, really, of resurrection that's kind of hardwired into the biblical story that we only get to see fully as when Jesus himself is raised from the dead. But can you see God's justice at work here? It's not just bringing things back to zero. It's bringing something incredibly more into place. You know, when Jesus, again, when we think about the resurrection, which is always just talked about in the New Testament, is God's act of justice. It's an act of justice that God raises Jesus from the dead. You notice that Jesus was not just kind of off the cross, healed, resuscitated, back to his usual self. You know, that would have been amazing, right? Of course. But in fact, Jesus is transformed. Something more is taking place here. It's not just getting Jesus healed and resuscitated and back to zero, sandals on, new beard, kind of same talk, right? That's not just what's happening here. There's something new. This resurrection has taken place. Jesus has been transformed. And the picture of this transformation, the picture of this sense of justice that what God brings into the situation is the very work of the Spirit. Have a look at this from Irenaeus. Irenaeus from the 4th century says this, "What could the visible fruit of the invisible Spirit be, if not to make flesh mature and receptive of imperishability? The Holy Spirit is sent to the entire universe and since creation has been transforming it, carrying it towards the final resurrection." Resurrection is not just something that's happened to Jesus. Jesus is the model for which all of creation will one day follow. Justice is about putting God's will to right. The vision is not just setting things back to zero. The vision is the transformation that comes with resurrection. It's more. There's always more in this. And this is why it's so important. It's just so important when we think about God's call in our lives to be people, not just of spiritual maturity and great spiritual depth, but also agents of transformation, that it always begins with prayer. It always has to begin with prayer. And here's why. First of all, this is what you see nearly always God acting in response to justice. It always comes from God hearing something. God heard the cry of the Israelites. God heard, you know, God hears, and then God responds. It always comes with prayer. Secondly, what's so important about this is, in a nutshell, what you're doing when you're praying, not just for yourself, but you're praying for a situation at work that's intractable and it doesn't seem like it's going to happen. Or you're praying for like a sense of like, oh, I've got this difficult situation. It's like justice is required. Something new needs to happen here. Or you're like, you're in whatever situation you're in and you're facing and kind of injustice, and justice needs to happen, you're in a situation that is broken and wholeness and something new needs to come, praying does this. You're grabbing hold of that broken situation and you're holding on to that with one hand. And with the other hand, you're hanging on to the Spirit's desire for resurrection. And this cross shape enables something of the love of God from here and the power of God and the Spirit of God that you're holding on to with this hand to flow into this situation to bring about not just healing, but to bring about resurrection. And it's done through not just our strength, it's done through God's power and God's strength and God's presence. This is why it always starts with prayer, because essentially what we're wanting in these situations of brokenness is not just to get back to zero. This, weirdly, is an opportunity for God to plant a seed in a broken crack in his creation that actually a new plant, something new creation, can flourish and grow from that situation. You know, thank goodness for Pentecost. This is, you know, the day we're celebrating today in the church calendar, because it's actually only through Pentecost that the resurrection doesn't just become one thing that happened to one person. Resurrection is actually available for everybody and for the whole world. In Romans 8, it talks about the fact that the same Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead, the same Spirit that was kind of brought about the transformation of Jesus, is in each one of you, and sometimes me. The Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead is in you, so that you might be agents, not just of kindness, not just of kind of swearing less, not just of being charming all the time, but actually agents of justice, agents of new creation, when we're able to hold on to the brokenness of the world with one hand and the promises of God on the other, and something of God's justice can flow into that situation, and newness and light and redemption and forgiveness and new creation can happen. Now, there's a lot more to justice than this, and we're going to unpack this more and more as we go, but it's this vision of what God has for God's world. It's not about condemnation. It's actually about newness. It's not about just setting things back to zero. It's not just about restoration. It's about resurrection. In 1995, there was the end of apartheid in South Africa, an end of a long period of time where lots of injustice happened. It was quite a dark patch, of course, in human history. And in a weird way, the kind of Dutch church was also implicated in it. It was actually a pretty dark moment all around. But then kind of Desmond Tutu and Nelson Mandela, they decided they wanted to approach things slightly different. How is healing going to take place in this situation? They decided that what we wanted to do is basically have, if any police officer or anyone in the army who had actually done a serious kind of, had done an injustice, if they were to, in a courtroom, meet the person or meet the kind of family that injustice was inflicted upon, and they talked about the truth of what happened, and they owned the truth that would happen, then in fact, there wouldn't be kind of other implications around that. They wouldn't have to go to a trial, and there wouldn't be imprisonment. And of course, you know, there's all kinds of like, is this a good idea? Is this a bad idea? You know, there's all kinds of theories around how good or bad that is, and what a reflection of justice that may or may not be. But in this courtroom, there was one police officer. His name was Vanderbroek, and he spoke about the fact that he went into a village one day, and they found and shot an 18-year-old boy, and they dragged him outside, and they burned his body to destroy the evidence. 8 years later, this same police officer took the husband of a wife and the father of the son, and bound the wife and made her watch them burn her husband alive. It's very grisly, and sitting there was just absolutely a horrific situation. The judge then asked the wife of this terrible atrocity what she would like to say to Vanderbroek, who had done this horrific crime. And what she said was absolutely just phenomenal. You know, it's hard to get the words out. What she said is like, I want you to go to the place that where you burnt my son and you burnt my husband, And I want you to gather up the ash from there, the dirt from the ground, and I want to be able to give my family a decent burial. Then I want you to come to my house twice a month. I live in a ghetto. I'm inviting you over to come into my house. I'm still a mother, and I have a lot of love to give. I want to know that you are forgiven, that I forgive you, and that God forgives you. And I'd like you to sit at my table and be like a son. What I'm saying is justice doesn't have to set things back to zero. Justice is not just about retribution. You want to crack open a situation and let the Spirit of God come in and let something new happen and spring to life. What happened in that courtroom next is that everyone was quite shocked, and she stood up and she said, I want to let you know that this forgiveness that I've spoken about and this love that I've offered is for real. She stood up from her seat in the courtroom and she started to walk to the dock to see Thunderbrook, holding out her arms. Someone gathered there in the courtroom instantly sprung into singing Amazing Grace. He stood up to hug her, but kind of in the moment felt the whole situation and fainted. He was out. It was just too much. It was too overwhelming. You know, God's justice brings about something new. God's justice is a very powerful force in the world to set not just things to right, but to actually bring about our resurrection. So as I come into land, we're going to have communion in a moment. And as we kind of think about it, it's Pentecost Sunday. I want you to kind of sense that God's Spirit within you is not just wanting to put you right. God's Spirit within you wants to use you as a conduit through which His presence and power might flow into your places of work, the people you live with, the school that you go to, the educational system you're a part of, you know, that anywhere that kind of the scope or the kind of the circumference of kind of your sphere of influence and power. God wants you there. Not just to be nice Anglicans, God bless you when you are doing that, but actually through you, that God's justice might flow, that new creation might come about, and there'll be a sense, a hint, a vision, that sound of music of new creation might be present, that others might know something of God's love, and that God might know something of God's power to set them right also. Let's stand together.